Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Thompson sheds green, hits the three. Harrison Barnes trying to overpower Parker.
And right back to Curry. You cannot give him an opening. And Curry gets the three. Curry for three. Just like that.
And a chance to set a new mark when they close out the season Wednesday against the Memphis Grizzlies.
It has for me because I've been trying to chase it forever, you know. So, you know, for us to accomplish a part of it, you know, especially to do it here where it's tough to win, says a lot about this team. And the odds weren't in our favor. We got it done.
It's the best of the seven now.
Illinois, pretty good bunker shot.
Yeah.
Quadruple bogey. So really the best Jordan can be now is three behind.
Bogey at 17. It's been his nemesis hole around Augusta National. And there is the winner. He can celebrate now, Danny Willett. 2016 Masters champ.
That's tough. It's really tough. Well, that ball flight is one that's come up quite a bit for me on par threes this week. I'm not getting around my body enough. Just put a bad swing on it right at the wrong time, and then probably should have gone to the drop zone where we knew the yardage. It was kind of tough for me to commit over by the 13th hole. So, yeah, just compounded mistakes. Just lack of discipline to hit it over that bunker coming off of two bogeys instead of recognizing that I'm still leading the Masters by a couple shots.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Wow, what an unbelievable weekend and what an unbelievable show we've got for you right here this afternoon on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo Sports Leader. Thanks for joining us. Bob France, Jim Cushlin here, put the montage together once again. We're going to have a couple of important guests joining us today. We want you to be a part of the show as well. Phone lines open, 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. We'll get you up and on the radio as quickly as we can. Don't forget, you can also tweet to us at Sports Radio 1065, Sports Radio 1065, and Facebook comment to us at 1065 The Ticket. Got a couple of good topics of conversation going on Twitter and Facebook already, and we'll talk a little bit more about that as we go. It's hard to know. I mean, honestly, it's hard to know where to begin because you've got two incredibly monumental things happening yesterday late in the day at the same time. Well, close, actually one really right after the other, but it kind of was going on. The theme of it was going on at the same time. I'll explain. But both of them in opposite directions. In one direction, you have Jordan Spieth, the defending Masters champion, who had set a record by leading outright for seven consecutive rounds of the Masters. No one had ever done that before. In his win last year, he won all four rounds, was in the lead after all four rounds outright, no shared leads. For the first three rounds this year, the same thing. In fact, Rhett led it the same way through half of the final round. But then Jordan Spieth imploded on his way to becoming the first back-to-back Masters champion since 2001-2002, and somebody named Eldrick pulled that off. You may have heard of him. Yeah, he would have been the youngest player ever to win back-to-back Masters championships, by the way, while he was at it. That's pretty amazing. But instead of doing that, he has one of the more epic meltdowns in the history of Augusta National. You just heard a little bit of the lowlights, if you will, from number 12, where he went drinking twice and ended up with a quadruple bogey that took him from a lead, a comfortable three-shot lead, into a deficit that after three more birdies in his back nine from the eventual champion, Danny Willett, would end up costing Jordan Spieth his championship. It is an unbelievable story. It had so many different side stories there that we want to talk about, and we're going to talk about coming up in, 20 minutes or so. We're going to talk with Brendan Porath, golf writer for SB Nation, who is covering Augusta National, and he's going to talk about Augusta's most famous hole, number 12, the one that destroyed, in the headline even, destroys Jordan Spieth at the 2016 Masters. So there's so many storylines that are talk about with him. We'll do that coming up at about 3:35. And then at almost the same time, at least they were on the court warming up pretty much, while Jordan Spieth is melting down, we're waiting to watch the Golden State Warriors make history in the other direction. Rather than one of the more epic meltdowns, a more epic storm toward history. 72 wins, the Chicago Bulls' all-time record of 72-12 was on the line yesterday, in the way at San Antonio, an undefeated at-home San Antonio team, a team that is probably going to meet them if everything breaks right in the Western Conference Finals, a team that probably wanted to make a statement, not only that, but to defend their undefeated home court record. All of those things facing the Golden State Warriors yesterday. And what do? They go out and get another monumental 37-point performance from one Stephen Curry. Steph Curry is just making the NBA his toy box. He just comes in and plays around with whatever he wants to, and there's nobody who can really stop him. It's his little toy box. It's his world. Everybody else is just trying to, kind of find a place to be alongside, and it is Steph Curry, the soon-to-be two-time reigning NBA MVP, taking down, with the able support of his teammates, of course, San Antonio on their floor, albeit without Boris Diaw and without Tim Duncan in that game. The Warriors reign supreme again, making me rethink my seven-game prediction if they have a Western Conference final, a best-of-seven between those two. I said I think San Antonio would win, but you know what? The Spurs just won it on their court rather handily. Now they won it on San Antonio's court. I might have to rethink that position. And now, of course, they have an opportunity to close the whole thing out and own the record outright. All they need is a win over Memphis to get what? Yeah, to get the all-time 73-9 record, besting the 72-10 of those Chicago Bulls. So we got two really tremendous stories. Like I said, things going in different directions, and it's really hard to know which one to lead with. Baseball-wise, the Indians rained out for the third time in their first week. That's not cool. That's not fun. That's not something anybody wishes for, because you know it's going to come back to bite you later on in the season when you got to play all of these rainout makeup games. For the Tigers, they are getting pounded right now in the top of the sixth inning, 7-2.
Yeah, I wonder if Justin Verlander wishes it was a little bit of a rain delay and rain out like the Tigers had yesterday for what was supposed to be the Sunday night game last night, and that gets rained out. And Justin right. Verlander, second start of the year, what more can you say? 7 runs, 10 hits. That says it all right there. I think he might have wished it was a rain out, too.
In 4 and 2/3.
4 and 1/3.
4 and 1/3, yeah. That's not going to go well. That's going to leave a mark on your ERA, and it's a pretty nasty one right now. But at 7-2, that game's not over. Tigers obviously 3-1 coming into this one. We'll see what happens. They're going to finish up against the 4-2 Pirates here. And then the other big story we have to talk about, Jim Cushlin, is the saddest one and the most tragic one and, quite frankly, the most confusing one, because we don't know what's going on. What we do know is that a very, very young, still very young man, known very well to Ohio State fans, defensive end with the Buckeyes, and then defensive end for the New Orleans Saints in a 10-year NFL career, Will Smith, shot and killed. You know the story by now. The belief at the beginning of all of this was that this was a simple road rage incident. Somebody, they smacked bumpers and words were exchanged and tempers flared, and pretty soon Will Smith is shot and killed. His wife is shot as well. It's just about as bad as you can imagine it being. But come to find out a little bit later on, as the day has gone on today, we're getting more information here that the circumstances are not nearly as clear as that would indicate. The circumstances of the murder of Will Smith suggesting a possible motive other than road rage. Regardless of how Cardell Hayes, who is in custody and being charged with second-degree murder, as we know for now, as far as we know for now, regardless of why he did it, the fact remains he did do it, but the motive is being described now as being a little murkier than was at first believed. The New Orleans Advocate points out that Cardell Hayes sued the city of New Orleans back in 2005 after police officers killed his father. Shortly before the automobile accident that resulted in Hayes shooting Will Smith and his wife, Smith and former Saints teammate Pierre Thomas had eaten dinner with somebody named Billy Saravallo, one of the officers who had shot Anthony Hayes, the father of Cardell Hayes. So the belief now, or at least one of the working theories, is Hayes might have been so outraged at Will Smith having dinner with one of the officers who killed his father that he may have followed him, smashed into him, and eventually executed him simply out of kind of some sort of revenge hit. Per the Advocate in New Orleans, Saravallo described Smith and Thomas as personal friends, excuse me, of his. However, Saravallo, the officer, was not at the scene of the shooting. He also claimed he wasn't aware that Cardell Hayes had named Saravallo in the lawsuit, which had been settled. I beg your pardon, Jim, help me out there if you need to, because if you can, because I've got a nasty coughing fit happening again here.
Yeah, I mean,
but just
thinking
I'll
of
try
this.
To get through the facts here, and then I'll let you react
sure.
to it a little bit, Jim, while I clear my throat. The lawsuit was settled in 2011 for what Hayes' lawyer called, quote, a large amount of money, but there's no record of that. If Hayes were seeking merely retribution for his father, common sense suggests that he simply would have shot Saravallo, the officer. But then again, and this is now from Yahoo Sports editorializing, the mind of a person capable of killing another person isn't always awash in rational thought. For now, the point is that either the incident of road rage carried with it a strange and bizarre coincidence, or there really was no coincidence and it was intentional. But that really just adds something to an already horrific, tragic story for Will Smith, who is an innocent bystander in this, regardless of whether it was road rage or this this individual who had something in for the cop that was having dinner with Will Smith and former teammate Pierre Thomas, and he decided this was going to be his payback.
Yeah, this is just messed up. The more that has been coming out today on this. I mean, it was bad enough, honestly, when it's just you know, and I want to make light of it, a simple road rage gone out of control. I mean, that's bad enough as it is, and then to hear these kind of details. What is going on there?
Yeah, I mean, road rage
I really
is bad
can't
enough.
Express.
We see that kind of thing far too often anyway, but at least in those circumstances, it is considered to be a momentary lapse of judgment and reason, and your anger and rage get so high that you can commit an act of violence.
Right.
This sounds like it was a hit. This sounds like if this
it sure
is
does, based, doesn't it?
You know, he plotted this. He saw that Will Smith and that Pierre Thomas, two former Saints, were eating dinner with this guy that he, you know, holds responsible for the death of his father. And I don't even know the story about that. But he blames this officer and says, here's my payback. And you know, the part about, you know, the editorializing I was reading there, why not just shoot Saravallo, the officer, if he really wanted payback or retribution for his father? You know, it looks like it was really, really pre-planned. Smash into his car first, so then you can make it look like road rage, which, when it comes down to it, you would carry a much lighter sentence, a second-degree murder charge, than just going out and then executing a police officer that you believe, you know, illegally killed your father. So, you know, the road rage thing, I mean, why smash into the car? Why not just shoot him? Well, because to make it look like something that would be, you know, less carry with it, perhaps less of a penalty. At least that's, and that, of course, would make all of this premeditated, which would be first-degree murder, And we have to see how this whole thing plays out once the investigation is concluded. Right as of now, it is just getting started.
Oh yeah, I mean this all just happening yesterday, and at first we heard what we got reported last night and into the very early part of this morning, and then these extra things coming out, and it's going to be a while before this one gets sorted out. But it is weird, Bob. I know it's my job to, but. I'm finding hard to express exactly the words to describe this. This is just messed up.
Yeah, and there's nothing that's going to make it less than that.
Yeah.
I mean, really, even if we finally get to the motive, it appears that if the motive is some sort of weird, strange, cockeyed revenge for his father, that's jacked up. And if the motive isn't any of those things, and it was just a coincidence that these two guys, Will Smith and Pierre Thomas, had dinner with one of the officers that Cardell Hayes, holds responsible for his father's death. If it's just coincidence and it was really just road rage, then that is messed up. In neither scenario can you make sense of the violence. And in neither scenario can you say, well, it like makes me feel a little bit better. It doesn't. Neither one of them do. It's just, you're talking about a husband and a father of children, talking about Will Smith, who in by any stretch, in any account of this strange situation, is nothing more than an innocent bystander here. Having dinner with a police officer friend and then being killed for having it, or just being the victim of a ridiculous road rage shooting, it's there's nothing you can that the investigation will bring out of this, I guess I should say, that will make anybody feel any better about the loss of Will Smith and obviously the near loss of his wife.
Yeah, so, and that last part, is so well said. No matter what end up details, and it'll be months, but obviously, before it's all said and done and parties are ready to go to court or whatever on this one, but it's not going to change that. I mean, it's like I said, it's bad. It would have been bad enough if it was just simple road rage, but now it may be this. That's just messed up in multiple different levels. And you said a minute ago, somebody commenting on the reports in the New Orleans Advocate about these. It is hard to tell. It's not exactly logical what goes through the head of somebody like this, but I don't think anything. I don't think it's going to make sense to anybody when it does come out, because no. These are two guys that are football players that just. Maybe happen to be in a wrong place, according to the guy who shoots them. That's.
Yeah, and maybe not wrong place. Maybe the guy knew who they were and just figured, how can you be friends with this cop who took my father's life, blah, 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 one of those kinds of things, and therefore attacked them to get to him, kind of a thing. And I'm reading a follow-up on this, and I don't want to get too in-depth on it because we're going to talk golf here in a few. And this is a news story as much as it's a sports story. And as much as I do news radio and political radio talk, I also do sports radio talk and Never the Twain Shall Meet. I try not to bring news stories into my sports show and sports stories into my news show. But this kind of crosses over, and this is what I'll share with you from the New Orleans Advocate. Some suggested that the roots of this shooting of New Orleans Saints defensive end, former Saint and former Buckeye, Will Smith, was more complicated, tracing the roots back to December of 2005, when accused shooter Cardell Hayes' mentally ill father, Anthony Hayes, 38, was pepper sprayed and then shot by a group of New Orleans police officers, including Billy Saravallo, one of Will Smith's dining companions on Saturday night. In that shooting incident, Hayes' father had gotten into an argument with an employee at a St. Charles Avenue pharmacy while holding a pocket knife. City attorneys claimed later that the elder Hayes had lunged at Saravallo with that knife, trying to stab him before being shot by the other officers. Cardell Hayes sued for damage, alleging the officers should have used non-lethal force, such as a stun gun, to subdue his dad, but none of the cops had such a tool. They had guns. Cardell Hayes and his sister sued the city in separate lawsuits, which this newspaper says the city settled in 2011 for an undisclosed amount of money. That could be described as large, said the attorney who represented Hayes in that situation. Meanwhile, Saravallo on Sunday said he was just eating dinner with Smith and former Saints running back Pierre Thomas at a restaurant in the Lower Garden District before authorities said Smith was rear-ended by Hayes on a nearby street. Saravallo, who called Smith and Thomas personal friends of his, was not at the scene, and he was not aware that Hayes had named him in his federal lawsuit. But New Orleans Police Department Superintendent Michael Harrison said yesterday that while police were still investigating, they had not uncovered any connection between the 05 shooting and Smith's death. He said they had no evidence that Smith's killing was anything more than an accident that turned into a dispute which turned violent. It could just be all a coincidence. Saravallo also dismissed the connection, saying he didn't even know he had been named in that lawsuit. Attorney John Fuller also dismissed the notion that the 05 shooting had anything to do with it. Asked if there was any connection, he said absolutely none. So, you know, it's a lot of information. And the only reason we focus on it, I think it's fair to say, is because we're looking to try to make sense out of something that is senseless. Otherwise, why would somebody, after a simple fender bender, pull out a gun and kill someone? And not just, you know, one shot and, oh my God, what did I do, but several shots and then shooting the passenger as well, Will Smith's wife. That whole, you know, we're trying to make sense out of the senseless is, I think, what's fair to say here.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, and that's the only reason we care. And at the end of it all, Kush, you know, it won't matter because it'll still be senseless. Why shoot the friend of the police officer that you blamed in part for your father's loss, his death? Why blame the police or the friend of the police officer? So it's senseless even with that knowledge of the 05 case if there was something to do with it. And if there wasn't anything to do with it and it was just a fender bender, why turn it into a murder and an attempted double murder, for crying out loud? So it's just, there's nothing about this that's going to end up good. It's just we just are trying to process it in our brains because it's all we have to do to try to make sense of the senseless.
Yep.
All right. We got to get off of that for a little. We'll come back to it because it's an important news story and it impacts, a former Ohio State Buckeye, obviously, is the victim here, shooting victim. We're going to talk at 4:05 with Bill Landis, Buckeye beat writer, who's been covering that team for Cleveland.com, who we'll talk to him about his knowledge of Will Smith, his relationship, et cetera, and kind of get his take on this whole thing. But coming up after the bottom of the hour break, which is coming up now for a Sports Center, we're going to go back to Augusta. We're going to go back to Augusta National, site of one of the more epic meltdowns you will see in Masters history. Jordan Spieth cruising along to his second straight green jacket, something that would have made him the youngest ever to win back-to-back, the first to win back-to-back since 01 and 02 with Tiger Woods, all kinds of history just waiting to be taken. Just par your way home from the 10th to the 18th. Just pars. You don't have to shoot special numbers. Nobody was chasing you. Nobody was really closing the gap. Five-stroke leads. Then bogey, bogey, quadruple bogey. And, oh, my God, the entire world changes for Jordan Spieth. We're going to talk to Brandon Porath, SB Nation golf writer, about that story and much more coming right up right here. And, by the way, start chewing on this, too. It'll be kind of our poll question of the day, even though we don't really have a poll format. We'll take your calls on it if you'd like to. And that is this. Given the NBA's kind of dueling closing notes to the season, the regular season, if you had a choice, Cushlin, and we'll ask everybody this, if you had a choice of being able to attend Kobe Bryant's farewell performance, his very last game of his legendary career, to say goodbye to one of the all-time greats, or be in attendance at the Warriors-Grizzlies game, in which they are going for win number 73. It is, of course, not guaranteed to see that history-making moment. They could end up losing and stay tied with the Bulls. Which would you rather attend? The close of Kobe's career or the potential 73rd and record-setting win for the Golden State Warriors? So think about that, Jim Cushion. We'll ask you about that at 866-240-1065. And we'll talk a little golf coming up with Brendan Porath next right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
That's tough.
It's really tough. Well, that that ball flight is one that's come up quite a bit for me on par threes this week. I'm not getting around my body enough. Just put a bad swing on it right at the wrong time, and then probably should have gone to the drop zone where we knew the yardage. It was kind of tough for me to commit over by the 13th hole. So, yeah, just compounded mistakes. Just lack of discipline to hit it over that bunker coming off of two bogeys instead of recognizing that I'm still leading the Masters by a couple shots.
Wow. I'll tell you what, that's quite a different reaction, isn't it, from a guy who just lost in one of the biggest moments of his life, an opportunity to make Masters history, an opportunity to not only become one of the very select few to win back-to-back green jackets, but to become the youngest to ever do it, the first to do it since Tiger in 01 and 02. That's quite a composed response there. And Kush, help me out here. Refresh my memory. Did he have any moments where he walked away and stormed away from the interview and said, I'm done?
That's where you were going with this. No, he did not.
No?
He stayed through the thing.
He did. Did he have a hoodie pulled down over his face so you can't see it while he answered questions with one-syllable answers before bolting out of there? No, he handled that terrible disappointment with class. I wonder if anybody else was watching that and noticing that. Maybe somebody in North Carolina. I'm just asking. That's all I'm doing is asking. All right, Jordan Spieth. And you know, it's funny and kind of sad at the same time. Jordan Spieth lost the golf tournament yesterday, and he is all anyone is talking about. Poor Danny Willett happened to win probably the last major he'll ever win.
I know, and that's why it's about Jordan Spieth and the class, because let's be fair for 2 seconds here. After those holes happened on the back nine and I rechecked the leaderboard, I'm not going to lie, my first response was, who?
Well, yeah, I mean, going into Championship Sunday, there were some names up there that made you say, wait, what?
Who is that?
Who's Danny Willett? Who's the Smiley character
that's
playing
one
with Jordan Spieth? I mean, seriously, you know, Smiley Kaufman, who and what is that?
I know, never heard of him. I don't mean to sound blatantly ignorant, but I never heard of those guys until yesterday.
What we do know is that Danny Willett is the first Englishman to win this in quite some time. We also know that it's his fifth overall win, and he does not even have a PGA Tour card.
By the way, deep down, you know the Brits love that one, by the way.
Oh, yeah, of course. And he turned it down, by the way, did Danny Willett, the tour card for the PGA, to play on the European Tour. And you know what? So we won't see a whole lot of him coming up.
Maybe it's the British, but that's all I can think of then.
There you go. So really, you know, and I kind of feel bad for the kid a little bit, you know. I mean, when I say kid, by the way, he's 5 years older than Jordan Spieth. They're 4 years older. Danny Willett's 28 years old, for crying out loud. All right, joining us to talk a little bit more about the Masters and recap the astounding finish that we saw yesterday is Brendan Porath. Brendan covers golf for SBNation.com, joining us right now on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, Brendan, how are you?
Doing well, Bob. Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure to have you on. Brendan, you cover golf for a living, or is at least part of your living with SB Nation. Did you know much about Danny Willett before this tournament?
I do because it's my living, but I wouldn't say I was an expert or anything like that. You know, I knew he was an up-and-coming English guy. He's one of these names that probably the wider golf audience, had he not won the Masters, of course, would never have heard of until he was kicking our butt in the Ryder Cup in, you know, 4 months. He was an up-and-comer. He pushed Rory McIlroy to the wire in the European Tour's equivalent of the FedEx Cup, their playoff system. And he's played well in a couple of the WGC events, which again is those limited appearances we see him over here in the States. So we knew he was talented. We knew he was, you know, under 30. And playing well coming into it. But beyond that, you know, he's just not that familiar face, and we don't get too familiar with his game unless you're up at 6 a.m. watching Golf Channel European Tour coverage.
Do we have any reason to feel bad for him right now that he's not getting really much attention here in the States? I'm sure he's being celebrated in England. Is he from England or one of the British, part of the UK? Where is he from?
He is from England.
Okay.
I had the same reaction to my one of my colleagues. I said, who won the Masters again? I can't remember because, you know, all our focus is on the catastrophe at 12.
Exactly.
But I don't think we should feel sorry for him. He's got his green jacket. Looks like he had a rowdy night there with his agent and some of his buddies from England. He's a guy you can get behind. You know, he comes from a working class background. Parents had to mortgage their house twice to kind of keep them in amateur competitions and keep them in golf. And he's a lighthearted guy. He's not stuffy at all. He has fun, and they had a good night last night, so I don't think we can feel too sorry for him.
Yeah, and when I say feel sorry for him, I guess I just mean when it comes to the celebrity that comes with winning a green jacket. It's going to elude him probably for a long, long time. 2 weeks from now, I promise you the casual golf fan will try to remember his name and not be able to remember it, but they will remember Jordan Spieth giving it away with that quad on 12. So that's the kind of part of me where I kind of feel sorry for the guy. He picked these circumstances to win his first major, and probably, I mean, just, you know, given by his career, he's 28 years old. He's still a young guy, but maybe his only major. So I wanted to start with him to give him at least that kind of attention before we get to Jordan Spieth. 22 years old. He's still the best player in the world, yes?
Sure. Oh, sure. I think that's a debate. I think it's either he or Jason Day would be 1-2 right now.
Okay, fair enough. And whether he's 1 or 2 doesn't really matter. My point to that was, while still being the best player in the world or one of the two best players in the world, a lag time perhaps for him to get over this? This is something, while he still has the most talent and he's still 22 and he said all of the right things in the post tournament coverage, and he said, I didn't come here needing a win here to bolster my confidence. I already have confidence. I know who I am and what I am. And I think he used the word we, talking about his team with perhaps himself and his swing coach and his caddy. But he said, we're the best in the world, you know, when things are going right. So, but I'm picturing him at the U.S. Open. I'm picturing him over a crucial putt or a crucial iron approach shot or a crucial a drive or whatever. And I'm wondering, does this flash back into his head? He's a young guy, not a ton of experience. Does this flash back into his head the next time he's standing over something for the money, if you will, in the next major tournament?
I don't think so, no. And I think that's obviously the big question, the big debate here the next day. I think what we've seen from Jordan repeatedly over the last, and he's only 22, repeatedly over the last 2 years, is an ability to find that resilience to the blows, is he responds to the blows. And that's what was so shocking about the 12th. You know, he goes bogey to start the back nine. You figure, all right, he's still got his lead and he'll get it centered again. That's what we saw all last year. It's what we saw even at the British Open when he was kind of on the edge there. He somehow would still grab the hope of that Grand Slam and keep it alive, even after taking doubles in big numbers. So I don't think this will have an effect. I think, you know, we saw in 2011, Rory McIlroy did the same thing at the Masters when he, you know, hit it into the cabins on 10 and then went to the U.S. Open and won by 10 shots. I'm not suggesting Spieth will do that, but if he has his game right, I don't think the mental part, you know, his game was not sharp. He had his B-minus game. If his game is still B-minus at the U.S. Open, he might not do well, but I don't think it's going to be because there are these demons from the 12th hole. Where I think, you know, the mental side might come into it is when he is on that 12th tee again sometime down the road, because we've seen it twice now in the last 3 years where he's flared it out to the right there and put it in the water. He did it in 2014. He did it yesterday. So I think that may be a mental hurdle. But going forward to the U.S. Open, British Open, and beyond, I don't think this, while it's a devastating blow, and he was on the edge of tears last night, will have a major impact. We've just seen his character be quite the opposite.
You know, Brendan, as I'm looking at this, too, and obviously for Jordan Spieth, a ton of attention is going to be made of the 12th hole for obvious reasons. I mean, you know, PGA guys leading majors aren't supposed to get quadruple bogeys. That being said, you're talking about...
By the way, Ernie Els sent him a thank you note saying, hey, I appreciate that, pal.
But, you know, at the same time, it was more than just that. Quite frankly, Jordan Spieth's Masters was simply an outstanding round one. And then average to below average after that. In fact, his worst round was actually Friday when he shot a 74. So, and the other thing that jumps out at me other than that, guys, is Danny Willett, Lee Westwood, Jordan Spieth, Paul Casey, Dustin Johnson, J.B. Holmes. You know what they all have in common? They're the only golfers to finish under par in this year's Masters. I think that's astounding.
Yeah, it was one of those brutal Masters. It wasn't an 1800s going to win Masters like last year. And I think in those conditions, and we knew his game was not sharp. And then he cracks the face of his driver the night before it starts. And he kind of grinds his way through it. And we heard Rory McIlroy say Saturday night, I turned around on the 15th after walking off the 15th. I said, how in the world is this guy 2 under today? And that's supposed to be his rival. This is what Spieth does. You know, he's supposed to kind of ham and egg it even when he doesn't have his best stuff. And that's, I guess, what still leaves us in such a state of shock about how things went so sideways with the quadruple bogey, which he was lucky to get based on where he went in the bunker on his second shot from the drop zone.
That was a tremendous shot out of the bunker.
Right, right. So I think, you know, he threw it away. He threw away the green jacket, but I think there are also positives. I don't want to sound like a Spieth homer coming out of this.
No, not at all. That's why we asked you about it. I mean, I think everybody knows he still is that good. I just wonder if there isn't a little mental scar that is left there. That's why I asked that question before going forward about this, because no matter how many tournaments he wins going forward, he's always going to remember this one that got away, that should not have gotten away.
Sure.
Excuse me.
Sure.
If this were a fishing metaphor, I mean, he had it in the boat. You know, he's beaten it with a freaking club, and somehow it still slips out of his grasp and dives back in. It's just kind of goofy that it went out that way. So, but let's talk about some of the other guys here in contention, who were supposed to be in contention. What happened to Rory on Saturday, and were you surprised that he wasn't able? You know, I guess there's probably a lot of guys kicking themselves on Sunday night, because it just felt like for them, probably, he's not coming back to the pack. No matter what I do, he's not coming back to the pack. And then suddenly he comes back to the pack, and they got to be going, crap, if I'd have just made that putt, or if I'd have just made that putt, I still had opportunities. But guys like Rory, who had the bad Saturday, guys like Dustin, who just couldn't putt over the weekend at all, Dustin Johnson, there are some guys who just, you know, who are probably like, man, if I'd have known he was gonna implode like that, I could have been right there.
Yeah, I think you're completely right. And even without the implosion, we knew Spieth didn't have his A game, really. He's been a little sketchy on Friday and Saturday. You can't count on a quadruple bogey, but I think Spieth was probably shocked that the chasers right out in front of him are among the big bombers, the heavy hitters and the top talent in the world. Jason Day, Dustin Johnson, you know, McIlroy was still within striking distance there, about 5 shots back. Just did nothing to put a scare into him. They didn't birdie their eagle that second hole. Spieth, you know, extended his lead to 5 shots. So I think, you know, they have to feel, after getting through those tough conditions Friday and Saturday, and then finally getting to Sunday when the wind is supposed to die down and the green jackets allegedly set it up for birdies and leaderboard movement, they have to be kicking themselves. You know, the birdie chances were out there because it's a Sunday at the Masters, and they got that quadruple bogey gift from Jordan Spieth. I don't think Spieth expected Willett to be one of the guys, but I thought he had to assume that he would get a challenge from one of those big bombers.
Yeah, I don't think anybody expected Willett to be one of those guys. I kind of figured, you know, even, you know, he came in okay on Sunday, but I thought he'd go the way of Smiley. And again, do you know anything about Smiley Kaufman?
A little bit. You know, we learned more this weekend. He's just a PGA Tour rookie. It was his 18th PGA Tour start. He's a junior competitor of Spieth, but he said Spieth probably beat him 1,000 times to 0 when they played in juniors. He's gotten much, much better. He's, you know, one of these young class of 2011 high school kids that are really making a name for themselves on the tour, but he's really green. And it showed. He's not a really good putter so far, and that we saw that right off the bat on the first hole, and then he threw away, you know, gave 3 or 4 strokes back to the field on the front nine. I don't know that you'll see him in another Sunday final pairing at the Masters for a bit, but I think you'll see him make, you know, a couple runs on PGA Tour, but I wouldn't count on him to be some big name that becomes a superstar.
We're talking to Brendan Porath of SB Nation. He's a golf writer, and we're talking about the Masters. You know, going into this Masters, Jim Kuchlin, tell Brendan what you said going into the Masters.
That to a degree, I almost didn't care because Tiger wasn't going to be in it. And this is a debate, a fun debate that we had, by the way, last week, Brendan, about golf going forward. It's a debate that I know has come up in various circles in a quote-unquote post-Tiger kind of world. And by the way, guys, in random info just coming out in the last couple hours on this. Apparently, they got an 8.5 rating, did CBS, for the final round of the Masters. That's down 11% from last year. But it's up from 9%. It's up 9% from when Bubba Watson won in 2014. So I kind of consider that a wash. But I'm wondering, and we've been wondering, or at least I have, is how the casual golf fan is going to end up sticking with the game. And one of the things that we talked about, Brendan, was, you know, guys like Jordan Spieth, guys like Dustin Johnson, Rory McIlroy, and on, you know, have to have a nice little rivalry, among other things, because this isn't the guys like, you know, you, or even to a degree us. This is a more casual guys. The guys Tiger, in a way, brought into the fold and got eyeballs to this game a decade and a half, 2 decades ago. And I've always just been wondering how they're going to, keep a lot of those guys, a lot of those eyeballs without them, you know, not coming back in a post-Tiger situation. And I'm wondering what a collapse like this by one of these supposed stars that they're trying to promote might do to that. And like I said, I just found the numbers of the ratings. That's kind of a wash, down from last year, but up from 2 years ago. All three didn't involve Tiger.
Right. I think the casual fans, Tiger and the PGA Tour, the networks, I am quite confident have come to terms with Tiger Woods' era being an anomaly. Those are viewers that doesn't happen in the history of golf like that, and they're not coming back, or it's not going to continue to grow in that sustained way. They're going to try to hold the line with what they can. And they're going to push the young stars as much as they can. And Spieth, I don't know if a blow up hurts or helps. It's a memorable moment. It adds a little bit of a backstory and scar tissue there for the future. But I think people have come to terms with understanding, just accepting Tiger. You can't expect the Tiger kind of character or a Tiger draw, but once in a generation or once every 100 years, to be honest with you, once every 50 years, maybe, you know, Arnold Palmer and Jack being the last one. It just was an anomaly. And I think the networks for a while and the tour, you know, attempted to devise ways to keep it going and keep it going, but they understand that this is a once in a lifetime thing. I mean, you just got to accept it, do your best to hold the line and push forward. Now I think the game's in a great spot. 2 years ago, it was, as someone who follows this and does this for a living, it was kind of a dark place there when Bubba won. And then Martin Keimer won by 10 shots or whatever it was at the U.S. Open. And Tiger was on the shelf. We were just looking around like, what is going to happen here? Then Rory won back-to-back, and Spieth joined the battle, and Jason Day is emerged. I think it's come together for the tour and golf about as well as it possibly could here with these 25 and under group starting to make a name for themselves. It really has. It was dark there for a while.
Is it better, Brendan, if those guys all start trading majors? And I'm talking about, you know, Spieth gets this one, and Day gets that one, and Rory gets this one, and Dustin gets one, and there's like a young group of young guns that are going to continue to battle for the next decade and a half? Or is it better for somebody like Spieth, perhaps, or maybe it'll be Rory? I don't know. We thought it was going to be Rory there for a while, to get on a Tiger-like run, where he's the guy that everybody's chasing, where it's, you know, it used to be Tiger versus the field on betting lines at the Masters, where it's Tiger right. Spieth versus the field or Rory versus the field. Is it better to have an even run with a lot of young stars or one dominant figure that everybody's chasing?
It's a really interesting question, good debate. I think the best thing going forward, I don't think you want a larger group trading majors. I think the best thing for the game right now would be to have a rivalry, two-man race, you know, holding most of those majors, collecting them, and going head-to-head. In my opinion, that would be huge, kind of because you're not going to feel Tiger by himself. Jordan Spieth's not going to have that appeal as much as I love him or whoever else might love him. He's just not going to have the same wider appeal that Tiger had. So do a little bit by committee here, maybe develop a rivalry that you can hype up. I think that's the best way to go forward. But to have a group of four or five kind of exchanging majors I think then you're starting to get too far afield. Have two kind of superstars that are collecting as much as they can, piling it up, trying to get to double-digit majors. I think that's the best route you could go.
Can you identify the two who are most likely to do that? Would it be Day and Spieth? And if so, what would you say about Rory? Because I kind of feel like Rory, you know, when he's healthy, is they're equal, if not better. So who are the two, if it does happen that way, or who would be the two giants to emerge?
For selfish reasons, I think it should be Rory and Spieth. I hope for that. I think Rory's the most compelling player in golf right now. He's got a deeper resume than all these other guys. He's already won four majors.
How old is Rory?
I'm not sure excuse me?
How old is Rory?
He's 25. I think he just turned 26.
Okay.
But now we're not sure he may not be as interested in this as Spieth and Day. And, you know, maybe he's stacked up money to the ceiling. He might not care that much. He's got all this pressure on him from Nike, you know, to be their face of the brand now that Tiger's receding. But we have to wonder about kind of his drive to want to do this. And that's perfectly fine. That's okay. But he's as talented as anyone else. But he's just throwing away shots with his wedges and just gotten worse, a lot worse with that club since 2014. And his putting's not up to the task of Spieth. And Day, too, quite frankly. Day has the power of Rory, and he's got a better short game, too. So Rory, for me, is the most compelling guy in this career slam chase. You know, winning the Masters or his demons at the Masters is the most compelling story in golf.
No question about it. Really, really good stuff. Brendan Porath of SB Nation, golf writer, covering Augusta yesterday. Really, really great breakdown today. By the way, if you had to rank it, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how bad was that meltdown? And if you want to go back to Vandeveld and some of the other more classic major meltdowns, well, not rank it in terms of compared to those, but just on a 1 to 10 scale, how bad was the meltdown, 10 being the worst?
I mean, it was a full-blown 10 for me, just based on everything we know about Spieth. You know, it's probably not as inexcusable as Vandeveld.
He didn't roll up his pant legs, though, and go into the drink the way Jean did.
Right. It was a full-blown 10 for me, though. Just so unexpected.
Brendan, great stuff, man. We appreciate it. We'd love to have you back on again next time.
All right. Thanks, Bob. Really appreciate it.
You got it. All right. There you go. Brendan Porath from SB Nation. On the other side, we're going to take a timeout here and get to the top of the Sports Center. On the other side of that Sports Center, we're going to shift gears a little bit. We're going to talk about the tragedy of Will Smith, former Ohio State defensive end, former 10-year NFL veteran with the New Orleans Saints, ridiculously, tragically, horrifically shot down as a young man, husband, and father in a road rage or more type incident in New Orleans. We'll talk about that story with Bill Landis, who covers the Ohio State Buckeyes, coming up directly after the top of the hour break. Also, while we're in this top of the hour break, how about we give you another chance? This is the last week, the final week to qualify for the trip to Orlando, Florida. 4 days and three nights. All you got to do is be the 10th caller to 866-240-1065, and you'll be in the drawing for the grand prize of that trip to Orlando, Florida, at the beautiful Orlando World Center Marriott, offering experiences that are a world beyond compare.
And a week from today, we'll be announcing the winner, by the way.
I'm sorry?
And a week from today, we'll be announcing the winner.
1 week from today, so that makes this week come Friday, obviously, the end of the week, the last week to qualify. So this is one of your last shots at it. It's brought to you locally by Allegiant Air, Toledo Express Airport, Shays Carpet, Carrider, Monroe Generators Plus, and ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Thanks for that heads up there, Jimmy. We will be announcing that winner 1 week from today. So good luck. You'll be the qualifier if you're the 10th caller right now.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.